Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasagonye, Will Blue Otter, a seventh grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Aginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. We've got a really special guest. Before I introduce Lori, let me give you a little bit of background. Back in, I guess we're going back to about 92, 93, something like that, when I first became aware of her maps. I was in my first, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of walking the Red Road. And I was down... at an Inipi lodge, you know, sweat lodge at White Eagle Neal's place, and I met a professor, a guy that who was a Brigham Young University professor, Avra Migliotti, and another lady, and we were talking about the earth changes, and this one lady said, "Oh yeah, I've seen that maps," and she says my father has seen the earth changes and even more detail, and he knows exactly, you know what the water levels are going to be. And interestingly, Mad Bear, when he back in 72, there was a big gathering of nations in South Jordan Park in Utah, and I know the person that drove him from New York. And as you're approaching Salt Lake from the east, there's a place called Parley's Canyon, and you can just begin to see the valley floor. And now this was a guy who had a reputation of literally traveling without his suitcase. That's another story I don't want to go into right now. But he was a quite a seer, and he made my friend stop. He says, "Hold on, let's pull the car over," he got out and looked around and shook his head. And when he got back in the car, my friends asked him, what's wrong? He says, "Oh, it's too bad." "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Oh, that entire valley is going to be flooded someday." And on the way to South Jordan,
she drove him around town a little bit, and he pointed at, he said, oh, you see that building there with a gold statue on top? You know, talking about the Mormon temple. He said, the water's going to come all the way up to that statue. And now that's the old level of Lake Bonneville. And you can see the remnants of the beach of Lake Bonneville up on the sides of the mountains there. And Orson Scott Card wrote a fiction book called The Folk of the Fringe. And it was around this whole theme of the future flooding of the Salt Lake Valley and people living on the fringes. And he even talked about people hiring out to take scuba tours of the Salt Lake Temple and everything. So yeah, you know, all pretty far fetched, but I'll tell you, there's been so much information. I've got some personal information. Lori's got a ton. She's kind of the person that started this whole ball rolling. Want to welcome Lori Adele Toy. For 20 years, her prophetic wisdom and insight has led this contemporary earth change movement and explored its relationship to human consciousness. Her work continues to enlighten and inform all those who seek the truth as to the spiritual, cultural, social, and climatic breakdown that we're experiencing due to what's happening now on our planet. Hello, Lori Toy. How are you?
Hi, Otter. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show, and it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it is. And of course, we've got, as I was telling you before, we have our little a gauntlet we put our guests through, you know, with we're going to give you your Mayan birthday reading, and I'll turn you over to Mark, and we're working on your getting your sound ready for your totem sound, which we do for all our guests anyway. So, Mark, what do you think?
Well, first I'll give Lori her reading in the traditional Mayan day count.
And oh, there's the badge.
That her birth occurs on a day called 7-Ix, or 7-Jaguar.
Mm.
She has jaguar energy, and jaguar is considered probably the most powerful totem animal in South America and Central America. It does have a connection to her other totem animal, who we'll talk about later. There is actually a relationship between them and Quetzalcoatl. They're both these totems are connected back to him. Now, her 7-Ix or 7-Jaguar, the number 7 carries the energy to catalyze things. It's considered a kind of a centering number of the 13-day numbers, but it's also a number that involves kind of a concept of like a final testing. So it's the jaguar energy is a little bit more, just like most cultures, cat, more feminine type energy. The number 7 on it also has a tendency to be a, in the center, kind of reflect both in white, so both light and dark, so kind of going back and forth like a mirror between the other 13 numbers. It carries some energy for purpose and future goals, so that might fit in with some of her current and past work. And then the more on the kind of the jaguar energy, it has kind of is considered like spirit protection of the plains, spiritual plains, and mountains, especially mountains, so she might like to be in mountains a lot. It's considered to be kind of a things associated with more developed states of consciousness, so things like that give you a rough idea. So it's good. It's also considered in their thing and the medicine wheel that have 4 jaguars in the position of the 4 directions. And that probably, this aspect is probably going to connect into Lori's work with the positioning of the golden vortexes on the golden cities, I think. Now, switching gears a little bit, we'll now look at an expanded Zolkin that I have and look at her birth from that perspective. It's going to have three different perspectives to it. A forward flow of time. This is kind of a counterclockwise energy. A forward or backward flow of time, which is going to be operating in the future, and it's more of a clockwise energy. And where the two together and create a doorway, a bridge, or a zero point, and merge with each other. So we'll do the first one first, which is moving forward in time. And it's a day called 10 Eek. This connects to Blue Water, not a direct hit, but pretty close, because Blue Water is 9 Eek. So this is the next Eek after 9 Eek, 10 Eek. And 10 Eek carries the energy of the T-cross of Quetzalcoatl, or the Lord of the Wind and the Water. And it's about sharing things to do with breath, a lot about spirit and prayer, and also oneness. You know, in Mayan, it's in Lakesh, or Lakota Somatakiesen. You know, all are related, this oneness. So this may be an aspect that's been with Lori, you know, since birth. Either something she already had a lot of skill with, or something that she, you know, picked up along the way. But it has a purpose. It has some energy that goes along with it. It's kind of a partnering energy, and it's Simi, which is carries the energies of death, transformation, and divine changes. That seems to certainly go along with her work with the maps and such. This Eek day is the 10th day of the Eagle cycle, so it's Eagle energy. It would be the thus it would be the northern hemisphere, and would connect into visions, but also mind, thinking, rational thought. So she probably has some ability here to combine spirit, prayer, but also switch to the other side of the fence and use the logical, rational mind as well. So that's kind of in a nutshell, you know, the forward flow. Now we'll swing over and look at the backward flow. And this is energy coming from our coming next world cycle, perhaps when, you know, some of Lori's work becomes more well-known or activated, if that some of her prophetic things come to pass, then she has an energy over there called Two Men or Two Eagle. So there's some more eagle energy there. And it's about, you know, like what we've been talking about, the mind, vision, revelations, things in here about polar things, polarity and the poles themselves and challenges associated with it. But it brings in here, it's in the Jaguar cycle. So that connects to what we were talking about earlier with the Jaguar. And so this is connecting two things together. And it's bringing in some energy here of ancestors, dealing with illusion and supernatural power. So these aspects would be things that may have been showing up a little bit more, you know, recently here in her life in the last, you know, 2 to 10 years or so. Those type of things she may have seen start gaining an intensity in her life and things just showing up related to that. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's maybe had continuing things on visions and revelations, but things, maybe something coming in here that has to do with connecting things back to ancestors and native wisdom and stuff like that showing up more and more and more and getting stronger and having to do with getting things started or getting things birthed, the birth of things. That's what I see here. So these two come together and form that center point or zero point or balancing point. And that energy is a thing called 12 Peace. So it is, and it's connected back to this thing that probably has been driving her since birth about oneness, things getting together. But it has the peace as its predominant aspect of it. And it has a thing about existing teaching childlikeness, peace, hope, communal tone of cooperation. So things about community and people cooperating and stuff, but they're cooperating with under will, purpose, and discipline. So it has those aspects to it. So those type of things sort of represent how Lori moves between the worlds, the thing, her ability, what gets her through it, but also what she can contribute as she's moving through it, what she can contribute and help others with. So a lot here about peace, hope, community, cooperation, purpose, discipline, and things like that. And it has some behind that as an even bigger amount of energy is oneness and then artistic creation of things, grace, beauty, artistic stuff, you know, would be maybe showing up as well in some way.
Well, how about that? Interesting. Oh, what are we here? A hummingbird has an amazing sound when you get close. Of course, before the show, we asked Lori about her totem. And, we'll let her tell that story and a little bit later on. But, want to invoke all that energy of the jaguar and badger and the hummingbird and the eagle and before we even got started with calling all the ancestors and from all the directions and Mark, you ready to turn Lori loose now? You think she's been properly instructed?
I think she's probably doing fine.
Oh, I'm sure she knows a lot more about herself than we do. So welcome, Lori, and let me ask you a quick question. Are you a fan, by any chance, of the TV show Royal Pains?
My husband watches that. He loves it. I haven't watched it yet, but I assume that you must like it.
Well, the reason why I bring it up is there was the plot against the doctor's benefactor there. His cousin tried to kill him, and it was all over, you know, Saint-Germain and the story that he used to tell him when he was little, and they were both very wealthy, and he eventually went mad and ended up, you know, killing another cousin. But we're going to be talking about Saint-Germain tonight, and I'm sure, or you know, maybe not. This is your show. I'm making some assumptions and.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And but you've got, yeah, tell us about your path and your new book and bring us up to date.
Well, gosh, it's hard to say just where to start, but I think for the listeners, I just need to sort of introduce how I even got involved in spiritual work at all, because I come, Otter, from such a conventional, traditional background. I was raised in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church.
Oh, you too.
It doesn't get too much more traditional than that, okay?
Augustana. So, my grandmother was Augustana, so that's... Yeah,
okay.
I got you.
Okay. So we're on the same plane there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was 22 years old, and I was working as a sales manager for a local weekly paper in a little town called Sequim, Washington, which is on the Olympic Peninsula near Seattle. And I was called to pick up an ad at a health food store, so I drove out there, walked in the door, and the woman who owned the store stood at the counter and pointed her finger at me and said, "You have work to do for Master Saint Germain." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Who is Saint Germain?" And she said, "Here, I'd like to, come with me. I'd like to show you his picture." So I followed her to the back of her store and to her office, and on the wall hung a picture of the Comte de Saint Germain. And when I saw his picture, Otter, I honestly thought, this is someone I have known before, even though there wasn't any reason why I would, because it was obviously from a different period altogether. It was during the French Revolution. He was definitely an aristocrat, but there was something about it. There was a vibration. There was an energy that really drew me to him. So I said, "Okay, I'd like to know who he is." And she said, "Well, Saint Germain is an ascended master." And came my next question. I said, "Well, what's an ascended master?" Then she explained to me that there are these beings who were people just like you or I and have evolved their energy to a level of experience where they no longer require to be reincarnated into the physical plane. And through that process, because they have risen their energy to fourth, fifth, and sometimes even to sixth dimension and beyond, what the Hindus call lokas, or levels of spiritual experience, that they also pledge to help protect humanity, and that they will actually at times come in to the earth plane, either in a physical body or through consciousness, whatever medium that they want to use, because they are not limited by time or space. And so, of course, when I began to understand this, I was very intrigued. I said, "Well, I want to learn more." And she gave me a pamphlet about Ascended Master teaching. And through that process, she became my first teacher of the Ascended Master tradition. It was a very profound time for me.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, just to be introduced to something like that, and not something that was ordinary. She became my first teacher. I started with meditation, began to read a lot of their biographies. I was extremely intrigued by their stories of love, of beauty, even the dark ones, betrayal and sorrow. And realized that these were indeed archetypes of evolution, and that there was something contained within this whole teaching that appealed to me very deeply. And fast forward a few years, of course, during this time period, I constantly asked, can I be of service in some way? Can I serve you in some way? Maybe that was my, as Mark was doing the reading, my quest for oneness, even at a younger age. I just wanted to serve at some higher level. And then one night, I was awakened, and at that time I was living in Idaho, and we had returned to my husband's family farm, and I could smell ozone or sharp oxygen in the room, and I thought, oh my gosh, I must have left the window open. There must have been a thunderstorm. So I sat up in bed, and then at the foot of my bed, I saw the Master Saint Germain, and his aura was amazing. It just crackled and effervesced with what I later discovered was a violet flame, but there were these violet stars that just surrounded him. It was really an amazing experience. And so I thought, I must still be dreaming. And so I sat up in bed and I kind of waved my arm through his image, and he vanished. And so I didn't think, too much more about that. I thought, I must have just been dreaming. But it was shortly after that experience, that appearance, that then I began to have dreams. And in this dream, four beings in white robes presented a map of the United States. But it wasn't your typical Rand McNally map. This map was a map of the United States with massive changes to the coastlines. And alongside that, which was the most fascinating aspect to me, it exuded an energy, and this energy was really high. It was like almost like a very high frequency. And I knew when I woke from this dream that something inordinate had happened to me. So I called a good friend who we had a spiritual group together, and I explained to her what had happened, and she said, well, you know, Lori, it's always been prophesied that the earth will go through a great change, such as maybe you saw on this map. But she also said it's also prophesied that during and after these great changes that we will enter into a new time of higher energy like a golden age. So at that time, I was a mother of three small children, and there wasn't any way that I was going to go out and market myself as a spiritual teacher or as a prophet for that matter. And it's kind of that was something that really went on the back burner. But 5 years later, I went through a very painful divorce, and I returned to the teachings in order to deal with my stress. And I was at a meditation class, and the teacher that was leading this, you know, went after we had done a group meditation, then she was questioning each of us individually and wanted to know, you know, what we had felt from, you know, the meditation we'd just done. And when she got to me, I explained to her that I had teachers that surrounded me and gave me instruction and told me, you know, what to do and kind of helped my whole process of whatever I was doing in meditation. And her mouth just dropped open, and she looked at me. She says, oh, well, you must be a channel. And I said, a channel? Because at that time, Otter, I had no idea what a channel was. I didn't know. And so after that class, a good friend who had come to the class with me, he said, let's grab a cup of coffee. I want to talk with you. And in that conversation, he said, well, you know, Lori, since it's so easy for you when you get into this meditative state that there are teachers around you, and I'd also told him about this dream of the map, he said, perhaps we could contact them and see if they will give us more information about the map. Now, my spiritual partner, who's in the book, A Teacher Appears, Dan, was a student of Edgar Cayce, and he was fascinated with earth changes. And so we agreed to meet in the early morning hours, and so he worked at an advertising agency. I was a graphic designer. And so we decided, well, 4:30 would work because I had my daughter with me and had to get her into kindergarten. And anyway, so we met at 4:30 in the morning and began these sessions with the master teachers. And in the beginning, it was very slow and almost obtuse because here he was with his handheld tape recorder, and I would be repeating these words that I would see in meditation, and then the master teacher's words appear, and then they would also then relay information. So there was just sort of this, I wasn't fully integrated yet into the channeling process, but then a teacher appears when it first opens up with the first lesson. That's about the time when the integration process had took over and I began to find my voice for the spiritual teachers.
It's quite a pricey process the universe drags you through, isn't it?
It never fails to fascinate me, I must say that.
Yeah, I've been widowed twice, and my second wife's theory was, everybody complains about how hard Earth life is, and she says, hey, and she'd really been through it, she was born during World War II, and her dad was Italian, and she was a White River Cherokee descendant. Her grandmother was a plant woman. And when her dad came to get her after World War II, her cousin, who didn't like Italians, they were, back in those days, Italians were treated about the same way that blacks were in the Ozarks. Oh, well, she done moved now, married somebody else, moved to California, which is a lie. And she went through unbelievable stuff. But she says the only thing that she could think of is that, hey, we signed up for every experience we think that negative or harsh or whatever, because we have something to learn from it. And she says when you start thinking that way, everything kind of comes into focus and, you start asking yourself, well, what should I be learning from this? And if you need to take breaks, you let me know. We've got lots of music here that we could play. If you're like me, you have to make trips to the little room, pretty often. You let me know when you need to take a break.
Of course.
But go ahead and I know. You got dragged through the knot hole.
Yes, and so through that process, we developed the I'm America map. Now, A Teacher Appears is a series of 51 small lessons that literally I dusted off for almost 20 years. I never published them because at the time, Otter, with the map, of course, which we inevitably organized and published and more maps followed after that, we felt such an impetus to share that information, the Earth Changes material, because you've got to remember, this is 1989, 1990. We don't have any idea when this is going to happen, but our sense of urgency was compelling, and we felt that there was really no other way to go but to share that information. So we really stayed on that for many, many years. And my sense is that because we did share that information, and so many people then started with their own spiritual practice and applying their own spiritual experience to the whole idea of Earth Changes, that I think that we may have slowed things down. I'm not saying we're out of the woods, and I'm not going to sugarcoat the prophecies by any means, but I also think that maybe we have a little grace.
Uh-huh.
And fingers crossed, I just hope that we may never see these as bad as they are. But I think that there are some indicators that show that we probably are entering perilously into the time of change, that we're like walking on a precipice, we're walking on the edge of that feather.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer and closer to that time. So now I'm no longer a young mother, I'm now a young grandmother. And I was looking through the material, sharing it with an editor who was helping me with Points of Perception, which is my first book in the Golden City series. And she said, Lori, all this information needs to be published because it's so seminal and foundational to understanding the whole body of work. And because I happen to be a very prolific channel, I'm one of these channels that I can channel for 2 or 3 weeks and produce 2 books. So I decided, I should organize this and actually produce this. And this is the first of a 3-volume set. A Teacher Appears is an introduction to the Ascended Masters of the I Am America teachings. And it's filled with spiritual information, which ranges from the law of attraction and techniques for how to work with law of attraction, earth changes prophecies, and how to clarify our own inner communication and develop our intuition so that we can connect with our own spiritual teachers. But then the second volume, which is After Teacher Appears, is Sisters of the Flame, which is really a beautiful work. It's about love, emotion, and the spiritual awakening. And then after that is Fields of Light, which is actually more healing techniques and as we lead into the ascension process. But it was also interesting to publish A Teacher Appears, Otter, because it was really something that I wasn't too sure if I really wanted to publish it, because I knew if I published it that I would also need to share my personal story. And so I've woven my personal story alongside the spiritual teachings, because with A Teacher Appears, it's really two stories in one. It's the story of how I awaken spiritually, and then just all of the trial and the tribulation that we went through in raising the funds that were necessary to print the map, the trials and tribulations we had in our personal relationship, and then inevitably in the end, how we break away from one another and go our separate paths, which it is very apparent now, looking back at it now, yes, we were brought together to do this project, to actually, you know, bring the I'm America map forward, but at the time you don't know that, of course.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
So I'm just really excited to share it, and I think it's really got some good information in it.
Well, look, before to put everybody in the mood for the rest of this, through the years I've collected some really cool music. Everybody remembers Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. Hoyt Axton wrote a lot of music. His mom wrote Heartbreak Hotel. And Hoyt wrote a couple of songs, and one of them's called Way Before the Time of Towns. And this was off an album that he put out in the late 70s. It's 3 minutes and 6 seconds. Let me play it for everybody because it'll kind of put things into perspective. And I'll take you guys off of mic while this is playing.
Way before the time of towns, when men were wild and life was free, my father's fathers, great-grandfathers, ancestors did see the morning star, the rainbow sign, early morn for all mankind, the god of life and growing things, the rising sun and me. And way before the time of towns, when men carved tales on great stones, fathers, great-grandfathers, ancestors did sing about the wild beasts they did fight, the ones that came to kill at night, and how they early morning rising sun did breathe. It was way before the time of towns, when women danced, the men looked down and gazed at them open eyes, and what they saw was fair. They laughed at how the children looked, bathing in the forest brook, and they were proud, and they were keen. And love was everywhere.
And of course, that's where we came from, but we're a long way from that. Here's another one. It's self-explanatory.
Violence chokes a smile on every face.
I'm sure everybody's heard that, but I wanted to throw that in too. We're back with Lori Del Toy and Mark Badger Borcherding. And boy, there's sure a lot of truth to what Leonard Cohen was saying, and he's got a lot of truth to tell. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of breather. I know you. I can sense it. You have a lot of energy running through you when you're telling your story. So, but
yeah, and because you know, a teacher appears just so you know, Otter, and for listeners, it's my story alongside these teachings that are there to uplift us. Well, I left this work 3 times. The message was so heavy, I wasn't even certain that I could deal with it. And so, inevitably, though, as many of us find out, either the hard way or the easy way, that once that spark is lit within you, you just can't turn back. And they had expanded my consciousness to this point that I couldn't deny it. And so, inevitably, by the end of the book, I committed myself to the work, to the message, and decided I would share it with others. The I'm America map is it's a very intense message because when people look at it, they're a little unsure. And I think the message itself for me at that time, I was a little unsure. I wasn't quite certain just how I should work with the material. For instance, at that time, I wasn't even aware really what a prophecy was. And I think it's important to point out that at that time, I thought that there was a probability that this really was going to happen. So we loaded 500 of the maps in the back of my car, and we drove down to California and slept on a lot of living room couches and did living room presentations, stopped at New Age centers, and just shared this information with anyone who was receptive and wanted the material. We must have done probably about 40 presentations of the material. But that was a very profound experience because through that process, I just became more knowledgeable with the material and how it really, you know, was meant to work. And I came to this conclusion that this information is not carved in stone, that this is information that is being given to us ahead of time so we can make different choices today. And those choices that we make today will indeed change the world that we live in tomorrow. So I Am America, which is my publishing company, our saying is a change of heart can change the world, because really everything about nature is somewhat mirrored or engendered in human consciousness. And I know that that's kind of a very sophisticated metaphysical tenet to wrap your head around, but there's a lot to that. And so that's why, as in Mark's reading, I do always advocate what we can do to ameliorate these types of prophecies, and that is spiritual practice, whatever type that you want to do. I don't advocate just one, but whatever is comfortable for you to do that, because I do think that we have entered, the Earth itself has entered to a tipping point. And there may not be too much left that we can do at this point because of climate change and global warming. And I think that that's one thing that we, as the powerful co-creators that we are empowered to do, and that is to pray and to practice at a spiritual level to help ameliorate this type of information. But I think it's very important, too, for the listeners that I go over the I'm America map just so they can get some sort of an idea of what the new coastlines would be like if this were to happen. I think I want to start first with the Pacific Northwest, and there we see Seattle underwater. Spokane, Washington is the new coastline. The new coastline travels down alongside Idaho, and so Washington and Oregon is mostly underwater. Mount Shasta is now a peninsula of land, and then the coastline, and this is interesting because you talked about this in the beginning of your show, Salt Lake City is now underwater, and there's a series of islands that are formed near Salt Lake City. It's probably the mountains that are to the back of the city. The new coastline travels all the way in to Denver, Colorado, and follows Colorado and really slices down the center of Arizona, and Phoenix, Arizona is now a seaport town. Interestingly, San Diego is still above water, but Baja breaks into a series of islands. In the central part of the state, the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers swell to many times their size, almost to the point where it looks like they're going to split the United States in half. And a large bay forms with Dallas, Texas underwater and Houston, Texas underwater. And then New Orleans is also underwater. So you see most of Louisiana and a lot of southeastern Texas is underwater. In the east and the northeast, there is a lot of ice and a lot of wind. And so most of Maine gets covered with ice, and it's very, they say that there'll be very, very cold temperatures there. And we can get into that later, and I'll explain to you why I think that is so. And New York City is underwater, so is Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of those coastal cities and bays and inlets are all get flooded because they have a lot of high winds and probably what we now know to be storm surges. They're coming in and flooding the East Coast. The rest of it seems fairly okay, except for Florida, and the tip of Florida is also underwater. So that's just kind of a visual for your listeners so they can kind of get an idea. They probably have seen an I'm America map. They've been out for a long time, but I always kind of like to go over that just so you get some sort of an idea of just how drastic these coastlines were.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before Ghost Wolf passed away, you know, the elders came up and stayed with him for a couple of weeks, and Grandfather Martin was with him, and he kind of reached over and poked Wolf in the ribs and says, "Hey, I told him to get out of California." He says, "Why are they still there?" You know, so... And my own story was in 92, Dimitru Dudeman, he was a Romanian customs officer, and he was in charge. Basically, his job was to make sure Bibles didn't get into Romania, and long story made short, you know, he ended up helping smuggle them in, and had a message to tell. He came over to the United States, and I went to see him. And shortly thereafter, I went to Creator, and I said, "Look, I said, I need to have a conversation with you." And I just Dimitri had said, you know, it took 16 times for him asking for it. He finally heard something. And I said, "Father, I'm sitting on the side of this bed. I'm going to relax, but I'm going to be here until I hear from you." And knowing that at that time I was active in the LDS Church, and I knew about the Mormon prophecies, and they know that someday they're going to have to migrate back to the center of the country, but to take a horseshoe-shaped route. So I said, and I knew because I've been introduced to Rolling Thunder, you know, shortly before that, and some of the other traditional elders. I know you never go without a question. So I said, "Why is it that Joseph Smith told the Mormons that they're going to have to migrate back to Missouri, but in a horseshoe-shaped route over the closest bridge on the Colorado, which would have been at Moab?" And I just relaxed, and 10-15 minutes later, my body felt like it was buzzing or vibrating, and a couple of words popped into my head. They didn't come from you know, outside my head, but it's just one of those things. When this happens, you know, these thoughts didn't originate in your brain, and the two words were the flood.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And I had absolutely no idea, you know, what that was all about. And I followed up on that and I started looking around, you know, for some clues. And in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson appeared to me in a dream, and he's also done this with you know, Marcin Quenzer. He asked her to do some artwork around the Great Law, but he just said, "When are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy?" Well, I knew Gardner was my sixth great grandfather, and I knew he was Cherokee, and so I, you know, kind of started, you know, moving in that direction. And I didn't know that Mad Bear had passed away that year, and I didn't know that till 2000 or 96, actually, when I finally I knew who he was. I didn't know what he looked like, but you know, he and I were sitting, you know, cross-legged. There was a table between us. He had a gold chain around his neck with a white translucent stone, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and his name was written in the stone. And I wasn't allowed to remember the name, but he had the pockmarked face. And when I moved to Moab in 96, was in a bookstore, and here's his book. And it was written by the same guy that had written the book about Rolling Thunder. And first thing I did was flip to the back and look at prophecy, I realized he was working on the same thing I was working on at the time, which is putting together all the prophecies. And my first wife had passed away, and I just decided I put together 16 pages back and front, and just gave it away and said, "Hey, you know, anybody wants a copy of this, you know, you're free to do so. If you want to donate or not, it's fine." And 6 months later, I got a letter from Australia, "Hey, we want to know more." And then Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who's was the first psychiatrist to really take the whole alien abduction thing seriously, he wrote me a letter and encouraged me. So I got online. Then I had a subsequent dream. Long story made short, I was lifted I was in Utah, and in the dream I was lifted up in the air, and I was carried over the Great Plains. And I had been walking up a set of stairs to a chapel, and the doors to the chapel opened, and water came out over my head, totally washed away everything. And here I'm being carried across the Great Plains toward the east. There's water and puddles everywhere. And years pass, I more or less was homeless for about 15 months. I was just sent on a journey, you know, just before Christmas of 2008. And I spent a few weeks at Talks to White Buffalo's house in Texas that winter. And I told him the story, and he just laughed. And I said, "What are you laughing about?" He said, "What year was that?" I said, '92. He said, He said, "Well, now this guy's a serious sun dancer and Cherokee Ottawa, a protector of the religious tradition." And he says, "I was up on Lookout Mountain, just west of Denver." And he says, "I saw a wave come across the Great Plains." And he says, "Denver was like flushed, like flushing a toilet." And
wow.
So, over the years, and then...
Which matches the I'm America map to some degree.
Well, yeah, and then the month that I was contemplating, Voc Rehab put me into grad school, wasn't able to stay in, so I went trucking. And that didn't work out either. My wife got sick. We both had to get off the road, and so I had to do something, and I had it in the back of my mind to start off this show. And so... I hadn't yet met Ghost Wolf, and I was reading about the prophecy where the elders had said that they called Hale Bopp the twins. They said once
right.
The twin that had passed to where he couldn't see him anymore, so after 7 years passed, which would take it up right about to that very month. It was that month that I was reading it, and I realized, oh my gosh. Well, what they said was that the red kachina would be discovered when the blue kachina was in the sky, but it would take a microscope or a telescope to find it. So immediately I got on space.com and put the words red star in, and lo and behold, just 2 weeks previous, a red dwarf star had accidentally been discovered 10 light years from Earth. And if you go to prophecykeepers.com, you can read some of the details. Well, and then I accidentally ran across looking into the third prophecy of Fatima, which was supposed to have been revealed in the mid-80s, Pope John Paul was buttonholed by some faithful followers in Germany, and they said, this is supposed to have been revealed. And I've got the quote, exact quotes at the front page of prophecykeepers.com, and more or less what he said was, well, he said, if the world knew that in the blink of an eye, entire continents could be overswept by oceans or sheets of ice, and millions of people would die in the blink of an eye, that's not so much something that should probably be published. And they associated this whole thing with the coming of a star. So
yes, I've heard a lot of those prophecies as well, and talked about that with friends, and the conjecture is that is possibly all Pacific plate, which is, you know, a large tectonic plate that rises and falls. And in my book Divine Destiny, which is my third book in the Golden City trilogy, is fascinating, Otter, because I was given a map of America the way that it looked before it looks now.
Well, there was a NASA employee that, and I've got the recording here, he said basically, you know, back in the 60s, Popular Mechanics, 64, Popular Mechanics magazine was saying, hey, this is coming. And it's going to be here in about 50 years, and here we are. And they're talking about tsunamis and you know, destruction worldwide. And
civilizations have risen and fallen many times.
Yeah.
Mu,
right.
Lemuria, Amaru, Atlantis. Atlantis had three different series, is what esoteric historians theorize. So
mm-hmm.
it's happened before, it can happen again.
Yep.
Well, one of the things, too, is just about, I don't know, a week ago or so, just recently, they came out with a story and said the largest volcano on Earth has been discovered underneath the Pacific Ocean.
Oh,
I saw
boy.
That, Mark. I blogged it on my Earth Changes blog.
It's as big as the New Mexico.
Oh,
wow.
That's not good. And there was one other guy that had a vision. He moved up to Durango, Colorado because of it, because he lived down on the coast. See, I was second, third, fourth, fifth grade. I was in Santa Monica, and I was over dreaming about tsunamis then. And he said, whatever happens, he said whatever's going to hit the West Coast, he says, it's going to come at such a velocity. He says, drops of water are going to go right through people like machine gun bullets. And he says, it's really – so. He says, it scared the hell out of him. And so, you know, the Hopi elders just said, you know, we need to get up into the mountains and forest. And, you know, that indicates a certain elevation. You know, you need to be up, up out of harm's way. And then you're Christians – oh, well, you know, God said in the Bible there's never going to be a flood again. Well, there's a problem with that. What he actually said was he would never again use water to destroy all life on Earth. And he used it against Pharaoh during the Exodus. And, you know, he's reserved the right, you know, to destroy any nation or nations that, you know, and... I mean, look what's going on in the world today, and you know, it might be a time for a chastening. Now, I just got back from Green Corn Festival 3 weeks ago, and I saw an old friend of mine. He's the eighth carrier of Sitting Bull's Pipe, and he was the first teacher to get up, and he said, "We've got 3 years," and. You're not supposed to interrupt somebody that's teaching, you know, at a social fire. I just had to stand up. I said, "How did you know that?" I said, "I've known that since 1977. I said, just as I was joining the LDS Church, I said, you know, hey, you know, how long have we got? And that night I had a dream that I saw the face of a clock, and I saw a brilliant flash of red light, and the hands of the clock melted, and the number 16 flashed. And then here, you know, about three years ago, I became familiar with the Daniel's timeline. So, you know, time's short. You know, people they need to get ready. And there's no reason to fear about it. And, you know, if you're prepared spiritually or whatever, and I'm just crazy enough to want to hang around and see the aftermath. I'm, you know... And to help put things together, and I've got some ideas, and they center around the concept of in the Book of Acts they call it all things in common. It's just the way the Indians live, but you know, it's the first thing the U.S. government did when they tore the Indian nations apart and a lot of their lands and they didn't hold weren't allowed to hold things in common and basically were acculturated. So, yeah, time's short.
Well, time is short. And, you know, in a teacher appears, I just wanted to kind of get back to some of these prophecies because I think that they'll mirror a lot of other ones that you've, you know, experienced yourself personally and also been taught. We kept on hammering the master teachers for dates. We thought, well, if this is going to happen, when is it going to happen? We need to know. And, you know, what we quickly found out is that these spiritual teachers, they don't deal with time the same way that we deal with time. So they began to teach us about what is known as a reference point. And they said that a reference point is a position in the landscape of the ever-present now where one can evaluate or weigh probability. And so by definition then, a reference point is placed so we can then initiate a comparison between actual events, prophesied events, and then the possibility of their timing. And so we started then to ask them, well, then what are these reference things that we should look for? What are the points? What are these, events that we should be looking for? Because if we follow a timeline, that almost never comes about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, to look for first changes in the economy. First in the United States economy, we have a total downturn. Then that would affect the whole international or worldwide economy.
Mm-hmm.
Then secondly, they said, look for overall global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And we're there right now. Those two things are actually happening right now. Then they said, the third event could be twofold, and it could play out a couple of different ways. First, because of the overall global warming, that would place a lot of excess pressure on tectonic plates. And I don't think people really understand this, because when you have a lot of water on our planet and it's spinning, this actually affects the rate of spin of the Earth. And so they said that that could actually affect tectonic plates and put pressure on and cause worldwide earthquakes. But the other thing that they talked about was a possible meteor, asteroid, coming towards the Earth that would impact in North America, and that this, too, would affect tectonic plates and cause worldwide earthquake.
Mm-hmm. The Rolling Thunder taught that also.
Yes, yeah, so these are all possibilities and probabilities, reference points. Now, I don't know if you're too familiar with James Balog and his work in his – he's a photographer for National Geographic, and he came out with a documentary called Chasing Ice. And he started to – yeah, it's really profound and a really beautiful film, really well worth watching. And he began to photograph icebergs and ice, and he put a marking point down where he had been and returned later and noticed the icebergs really are melting. And because he also had a background in the sciences, he didn't really accept the whole idea that we were in global warming. So when he saw this with his own eyes and took these pictures and saw that the icebergs were indeed melting, he raised a ton of money and went out and set out time-release cameras throughout Iceland, Greenland, Alaska, and began to take time-lapse photography, and came to the conclusion that ice is basically the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
And because small icebergs are susceptible first, that larger ice masses take a much longer time, and that Greenland really started melting about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
so he basically...
It's gotten to the point where the indigenous Greenlanders are... Their trees are starting to grow again there. They're starting to build their lodges again, but you know, this whole warming thing, it's not just Earth. When it was first announced, if you put in global warming and you look at the very earliest hints of this back in the early 90s, the entire solar system, just about every body in the solar system was warming, not just us. So something's going on.
Well, it's very fascinating if you watch what he has to say, because, of course, they do a lot of ice core sampling. And what he says is that basically Earth has a fever. The Earth right now is really in trouble. And they've taken these ice core samples, and this is what they have found out, that Earth has a climate rhythm, and nature naturally cycles up to 280 parts per million of CO2. And this has happened several times in the last 400,000 years, what they've been able to find out. But now we're dangerously cycling up to 385 parts per million, and that's a 2009 figure that I'm giving you. And when this cycle of carbon dioxide goes up, so do temperatures and sea levels.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got climate change. So he says that we're way outside the natural variability. And that's why today 95% of all the world's glaciers are melting.
Well, yeah, last year the Mississippi River.
And all these politicians want to make this a political issue, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's an
environmental. Last year NOAA's Mary Summerane's teacher, she said winter and summer all mixed up, and you know, one year the Mississippi River almost dries up, then it floods the next year, and you know, people are getting washed off the mountain about 9 miles west of where Mark is right now, and it's just total weather chaos, and it's worldwide.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And
it's
not getting...
It's a sign of the climate. And
yeah.
These are actually prophecies that were shared with us in... around the mid-90s, we began to ask the master teachers more, you know, well, you gave the I'm America map, so what do you think is happening now? Because that was a read of the collective consciousness then. Can you update the material? And so I think they were probably grinning, you know, when we asked these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because to them, how do you update a prophecy? Because a prophecy is this completely visual story that's given to you to incite from within your need to change. But... anyway, they went ahead, Otter, and they gave us what's known as the six-map scenario. And what they are, it's a progression of changes that starts with map number one and then walks you through from best-case scenario to worst-case scenario, with the sixth map being the I'm America map, which is the end result. And with every single one of the maps, there's ancillary prophecies that go with all of them. But what is so interesting is with all the prophecies are also all of the spiritual practices that we can do to begin to change these things, to begin to change the facts. And I think that this is a time where it probably would be good for me to segue into one of the most profound parts of the prophecy. I mean, we can go back to more Earth Changes prophecies if you like, because I've got a ton of them here, and I've got updated work if you're interested. But one thing that they did share that I thought was so profound is they began to share these locations of Golden City vortices. And what these are, they are locations on the earth that are prophesied havens of spiritual safety.
Uh-huh.
So they may be physically safe. I'm not certain yet if they will be totally all together. I think that there still will be some changes that will happen in them. But I think for more than anything, they are places that are prophesied that we can go to, which will accelerate our spiritual growth and development during and after the time of great change. And basically what they are part of, if you can wrap your head around this, they're part of what would be a Western Shambhala tradition. In Ascended Master teaching, they have this provenance, this story, this tale of Shambhala. And of course, Shambhala is also in Buddhism. And Shambhala is a story, is the story of a perfect town and city that was built by the immortals. And they gifted this beautiful city, known as the City of White, to humanity as a place where we could go and actually receive teaching, pure teaching, for those who wanted to accelerate their spiritual growth and evolution and move beyond the third dimension, liberate from the body, move into fourth and fifth dimensional consciousness. Well, that city was built and destroyed three times. And the third time that the immortals destroyed the city themselves because it had gotten so corrupted being in the 3D regular world. And so what they did is they surrounded the town with a pile of sandalwood logs, burnt the entire city, and then sent the city up to the ethereal plane. And so that's their whole myth and story about Shambhala. So the Golden Cities, how this relates, is that Shambhala actually, from the ethereal planes, calibrates the energies of the Golden Cities. And there's 51 total throughout the world. There's 5 in the United States, and I'll kind of talk about those locations a little bit. But what's fascinating about them is that they also contain within them, they look like a huge Maltese cross that covers an extensive span of land. They're 270 miles across, so they're big. And they are not located on the coastlines. You will usually find them located in kind of pristine rural areas. And I think that there's an intention with that, because I think that these are probably the future population centers of the earth during and after the time of great change.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one is located in Arizona and New Mexico. These are the United States ones. The second one is 5 total. The second one is located in Illinois and Indiana. The third one is located in South Carolina and Georgia. The fourth one is located in Idaho and Montana. And then the fifth one is located primarily over Colorado, but also parts of Kansas and some parts of Nebraska. And what they allege is that these areas calibrate their energy not only with Mother Earth, but also with many different spiritual teachers. There's like one major teacher who stewards each Golden City, but also there are certain points within the cities themselves, and they refer to these as adjacent points, and also there's tremendous sacred geometry that is contained within the Golden City. There are 4 doorways, and then there's many, many ley lines that you can access and access their energy. But what they do primarily is they assist us in our ascension process, that is, our own process of transcendence, of spiritual growth and evolution, and our ability, if we so choose, to enter into that ascension process. Now, it is possible, and they say this, that some people may be able to enter the ascension process in this lifetime and achieve it in one lifetime. But I know that I'm probably on the remedial program with that, and I think that the ascension process is something that we start and then we continue with it through successive lifetimes. So it is a way that we can actually start a whole initiatory process in spiritual liberation. And what's so fascinating to me is how we get this amazing opportunity for spiritual growth and evolution alongside this time period of such planetary peril and susceptibility. So it's almost as if the Earth changes are sort of instigating and pushing us towards making this choice to actually change how we are going to go about everything in our life, primarily starting at a spiritual level. So that is some of the information, and it's almost as if it shows that there are two worlds that will exist side by side, and there will be this perilous changing Earth. We will live in this culture, this society, alongside spiritual transcendence and the development of compassion and the higher aspects of humanity.
Well, with that,
well,
what
I'd like,
yeah, oh yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to. There's something interesting right before the show. I was doing a little bit of reading on these golden cities, and this is going to tie a little bit back into your birth reading. So remember that I said I did two readings for you. One was with the Mayan Dzogchen, and one was with an expanded Dzogchen that I'd received years ago. And as I was reading about these golden cities, something really clicked. As especially on in your work, it said on the golden city of Colima, which is the one over Colorado, which is where I'm at. It said that particular city had to deal with balance and harmony.
Yes, they each have
that really struck
quality.
Me. And the reason is there were when I was given 9 symbols that expand the current Mayan Dzogchen into a bigger, larger Dzogchen. And that's when I was doing your reading and I was doing the forward and backward and unity and all that. That's what I was using to do that birth reading. Well, I was, of those 9 symbols, 2 of them, their energy of those symbols were balance and harmony.
Oh, wow. Well, no mistakes
and
ever.
They're
ever.
Important because I was given day numbers and glyphs. And balance is the first of the new glyphs, and harmony is the last.
It almost begs
their color
we
is
must
green.
Enter into a harmony. We have to enter into harmony before we can really experience a cooperation.
Now, the other thing that struck me was I looked at the geometry of the energy structure of the around the golden cities. This was also very interesting to me too, because this geometry also matched with what I was given. And so when I was reading through these things on the golden city, I was going, this is pretty interesting. I mean, these things are direct hits. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. They're just wham, they're there. So as I was reading it, and it reminded me of something a while back that said that what I was given was kind of like a, I don't know, the way we conceptualize it, it's almost like a software program. So the programming of a sequencing and programming for, and it was that would it would go in and it was interacting with the magnetic fields, the ley lines, all this geometry, right? Which would be more of the sort of crystalline computer type of thing in that analogy, right? But these things, this what I was given, which is what I did your birth reading, was is literally sort of the new Dzogchen or frequency harmonics for possibly maybe these how these golden cities, they may be operating under that possibly in some way. It's what was coming to me as I was reading through this, and I saw these just direct hits one after another, and that was pretty interesting to me, because I got to be honest, I read your work earlier, and I thought, well, this is kind of interesting, but, you know, it really didn't sink in. But
right,
when I saw these direct
language
hits, like,
to translate it to us so it has meaning for us.
So, yeah, so I, this has gotten a lot more of my interest when that happened to me. And for you, it connects back to, in your reading, I'd go back to the part where I mentioned the two time flows coming together. And in your birth reading there, it was a 12th piece. And that has the aspect of peace, community, cooperation, and that oneness again. And it's also sitting on a very specific number that has sacred geometry associated with it, too. And that, its color is green, and it's one of the new glyphs, too. And that would connect into, for you, and it would connect into the green in the heart chakra center. And I believe that is also, that particular energy is also going to be associated with Kalima.
That's really fascinating, because early on in my work in the early 90s, in Ascended Master teachings, they talk a lot about ray forces. And they get in sometimes into numbering systems and that kind of stuff, and you kind of want to throw that all away because it's all and out confusing. But what they do talk about are these colors as spectrums and as octaves. And so they identify these rays as a perceptible sound and light frequency that identify with a certain color, and often they also have a sound as well. And early on, our teacher, of course, was Master Saint Germain, and he said that I vibrated specifically to the green ray.
Well, let me share something else for you from the Mayan tradition and the Mayan Popol Vuh, because this is related. When they speak about the changes going from one world cycle to the next, they have a couple prayers in there. And they do not mention any of the other colors of the medicine wheel, except for one. And so you're familiar with the colors of medicine wheel, right? Red, white, black, or blue, and yellow, right?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of different systems. You know, I don't know
exactly,
you know, how it fits in with what I know, but I know that
in the Mayan
systems
tradition, the center of the medicine wheel is green. And in those prayers, in the Popol Vuh, as they're moving from one world cycle to the next and going through darkness, all the other stuff that's going on, I mean, they don't even know where the sun's going to come up at. They're so confused. They don't even know if it's going to come back. And that there's only one thing they pray, and that's for the green road or the green path.
And
so
in Ascended Master teaching,
yeah,
the green ray is the ray or energy of science and ministration to humanity.
Yeah. Now also, there's some work, and they measured the frequency that's coming out of the top of a pyramid, which would be on your golden cities. You have four tetrahedrons, and then
right.
You got an octahedron or a pyramid sitting on top of it.
Right, which represents third dimension, fourth dimension, and fifth dimension simultaneously working together.
If you went to that top of the pyramid, and I think it was some Russians that did this work, and you go to a pyramid and you measure the frequency that's emitted out of the capstone of the pyramid, it's going to be green.
That's fascinating.
It's in a book. There's a book you might like. It's a little bit technical. It's called Life Force, the Scientific Basis by Claude Swanson. It's a very interesting book. It's pretty big and has a lot of charts, a lot of stuff in it, and it goes over some of this information. And it may also help you bridge the gap between some of this scientific stuff and some of the other spiritual aspects of rays and stuff, and bridge those two worlds together.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. Always looking for new resources.
I've given that particular book to a couple people or talked to them about it, and they went out and got it, and they, so far, almost everybody has absolutely loved it. Unfortunately, the book's almost doubled in price now.
That has a
tendency
to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I think that may help you a little bit, too, with understanding, you know, some of the natures and some of the aspects of these golden cities. And I also believe that they're going to, I don't know exactly how, are you familiar with the Hopi, the two twins?
Oh, the two poles, the pole stars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that,
I'm not real
those...
familiar with the language behind it, but I've read the story, and it's kind of an amazing analogy.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now, folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now, folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper, oh
yeah, I think that those are going to interact as well, and you can look at those as symbolism, too, of other things, such as, say, the torsion fields for the planet, or which would include the magnetic fields, and I suspect that the geometry of your golden cities is going to interact with those torsion fields, because they are those... each of those golden cities are going to have their own torsion field vortex system.
Yes.
And they're going to interlock with...
Yeah, and energy within themselves. You know, they spin in a clockwise motion when they're taking energy in, and then they go counterclockwise when they're actually removing toxins out of the collective consciousness of the Earth. And they have a flux of about 40 miles. So before you enter one, you may feel it, you know, even up to 40 miles before you enter into it. It just depends on, you know, because they do vary on a day-by-day basis. They operate almost like chakras would on the human body. They operate on the planet. And it's very interesting because there's many vortex seekers now. They love to travel to these and actually feel the different points because... our spiritual practice and our prayer and our meditation is actually amplified in golden cities and at certain points. And one of the most important points in a golden city is the star, which is the center, which you were just talking about, you know, as the green field. And that also is 40 miles in diameter. And that's where all of the four doorways coalesce. And so the energy is very intense in those areas. And people love to go to them because they feel they can feel the ray force, that they can feel the energy, and they feel their oneness with the earth.
Hey, Lori, do you remember Lori Lockwood? She was with you in Ghost Wolf in Indiana.
I don't.
She's on the line. I do remember being
with Wolf
Here she is, Lori, Indiana,
something like that.
Say hello, Lori. Or say hello.
Hey, Lori.
This is Janine, not Lori. Janine Lockwood.
I'm sorry, Janine Lockwood. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay. Lori, we were opening the Eastern Door in Indiana at Marita Pickett's with Ghost Wolf.
That's right, and it was in Indiana.
Yeah, we were at Pickett Farm, and Ghost Wolf was there, and I honestly think that he's helping with this project. You know, he's one of the masters helping to bring this.
I'm going to tell you a story a little bit later.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say. You know, I just wanted to let you guys realize that we were all together opening up one of these doors.
I remember that. Okay. I think that was like 1994, 1995, around in there.
Yeah, I can't remember. 1995, yeah, around that time. We opened up the first door. We grounded the energy for the first door to open up for the first
time. I remember that. Yeah, well, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Right,
okay,
after.
Okay, that's all I want to say. Hi.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Right shortly after Wolf passed away, my wife woke up from a dream, and I can always tell my second wife. I married my first wife's best friend, and this was 2005, 2006, something like that, and. She always she'd wake up and she'd go, you know, I'd say, okay, what'd you dream about? She says, I just saw Ghost Wolf in a dream. And she said he was with a bunch of other chiefs. She says, you know that famous picture of that Indian chief who was frozen in the snow? You know, I said, well, you're talking about Chief Bigfoot. You know, he's killed at Wounded Knee. I said, okay. And she says, yeah. And she said he was there. Rolling Thunder was there. And and I said, honey, I said, I don't know whether you realize this or not. It's a little known fact that the Hopi elders, they called Robert Ghost Wolf Chief because he had run a ghost dance. And I said, so had Bigfoot, so had Rolling Thunder. And she says, well, she says they were all planning something. You know, they're all
together.
Yeah, and so they definitely are, and that gave me the impetus to I put up a website at originalghostdance.com, and you can see clips from Billy Jack. See, Wovoka's grandson was on the cast and crew, and the actual ghost dance was a helicopter took off. And actually showed how the ghost dance worked. It's a spiral dance, and it's something to behold, and it's something that's a physicist would understand what was going on with it. But yet you're right, Ghost Wolf's out there, and he's part of what's going on behind the scenes with the masters. Definitely. I mean, the day he passed away, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. You know, he was told to stay home, but he hadn't seen his daughter in years. And he hopped in his four-wheeler, took off for the coast, went and visited her. And he was sitting on the edge of a bed, and he said, you know, he had a really bad attack, high blood pressure attack the previous August that laid him low. You know, he almost died then, and then the elders came up, got him back on his feet. But he asked for some aspirin, and then she heard a clap of thunder, and out of a clear sky, and walked back into the room, and he was laying back right exactly where he had been sitting, and the Thunderbeam had come to get him.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was thunder. Yeah.
Okay. By the way, I think I'm related to you. You said Green and Gardner, and I just had a DNA test, and those names are coming up, and they're going to the Cherokee tribe. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
so,
hey,
hello, cousin.
Hey, Oginalee, that's hello, cousin. Visit CherokeeDiscovery.com. We're the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. We're federally recognized in Mexico.
We'd love
to have you in. We don't turn anybody away. You're family, and so.
Okay.
But thanks
okay.
for calling in.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, Lori.
Yeah. Thanks, Denise.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, I do remember that ceremony. I'd forgotten about that, but yeah, at that point we were working to access many of the Golden City vortices through their doorways. And working at a human level to activate them and gain more knowledge of what they could do for us.
Well, do you want to take a little 5-minute break?
Sure, that sounds good. And if you want me to share some updated Earth Changes prophecies, I'd be glad to do that for your listeners.
Sure. I've Gordon Lightfoot wrote a lot of music, and he did some. That were just about prophetic, and this is called the Pride of Man, and we'll do this. We'll take about 5 minutes, and then we'll come back. But this is the Pride of Man by Gordon Lightfoot.
Go back down, back the way you came. Can't you see that flash of fire 10 times brighter than the day? And behold, a mighty city broken in the dust again. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Babylon is laid to waste, Egypt's buried in her shame. Their mighty men are beaten down, the kings have fallen in the ways. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Terror is on every side, though the leaders are dismayed. Those who put their faith in fire the faith shall be repaid. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Shout a warning to the nations that the sword of God is raised on Babylon, that mighty city, rich in treasure, wide in fame. It shall cause thy tower to fall and make of thee a pyre of flame. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Oh, thou that dwell on many waters, rich in treasure, wide in fame. Bow unto a god of gold, thy pride of might shall be thy shame. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. And only God can lead the people back into the earth again. Thy holy mountain be restored, thy mercy on thy people.
And those of you that know a little bit about me know that on the spring solstice of 1998, which I found out in 2006 was the beginning of the week of 9-eek, which is my Mayan day sign, I woke up one morning and a voice told me, in the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc, because the weather will become so bad it may even shut down computers all over the planet. And wake up and write that down. So I did. And one of the first people I interviewed was a one of the English spokesmen for the Renewed Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. And I interviewed him in the following November. He sent me a link to, and it's on the website, to climatology, meaning UN climatologists. I had a meeting about the 2005 was the hottest year on record, and they categorized it as a year of weather havoc. And of course, he said, "Hey, you know, you were spot on." But I decided after Katrina, and this rabbi friend of mine, Rabbi Michael Baron, he landed in Houston the day Katrina hit, and to meet with the Noahide people there. And so I rewrote, this is my version of City of New Orleans, and with my software I stripped off the original voice and put my lyrics on it. This is City of New Orleans 2.
In 2005, Katrina let her rip, taking dead aim at the coast of Mississippi, causing death and devastation like no one had ever seen, and anger and frustration in the town of New Orleans.
I got to apologize. That's the wrong song. Mine, I got it mixed up on here, but I'll see if I can find it. But we'll get back on the air now. Sorry about that faux pas, but I would like you all to hear that. Anyway, we're back on the air with Lori. And sorry about that. But yeah, there is a song there called the Katrina Song, and I knew I had uploaded, City of New Orleans and my version, but we'll play that a little bit later. What do you think of that Gordon Lightfoot song? Pretty good, huh? I guess they may have left to take a potty break. Hey, here is my version of City of New Orleans. Here, I found it.
Barreling down on the city of New Orleans, Category 5 and coming without fail. 3 days in hell, locked inside the Saints' Dome. This hurricane is way beyond the pale. All along her northbound odyssey, she bulldozed the Florida, rolling over houses, farms, and fields, tossing ships that had no names, freighters full of old scared men in graves of steel as to and fro they reel. Good morning, America. Politicians in the back room, a cadaver appointed, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the buck that holds the people's futures. It's a sin the winds are beating down the door. And the sons of fearsome pirates and the sons of old Hickory paid an awesome price for their granddaddy's greed. Mothers with their babes asleep, suffering oppressive heat, and the rhythm of their ways is all you feel. Goodbye, America, how are you?
day is done. Nighttime in the city of New Orleans. Gangsters just let good people be. 3 days of hell, FEMA's coming by morning. Through Louisiana's dark pass, rolling down to the sea. All the towns and people were swept into the roaring stream. And the Superdome still ain't heard the news. The mayor sings his songs again. The evacuees will please refrain. This town's got the disappearing hurricane blues.
Good night, America.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the wind blow, let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keepers.
Prophecy Keeper. Oh, yeah. And we're back. That was my version of the City of New Orleans. Probably should have brought the vocals up a little bit because the